What if we could get our kids to do anything we wanted them to do? Would you like to know how? Spoiler alert! All parents want their kids to do certain things at certain times and in certain ways. Truthfully, instead of getting our kids to do whatever we want, it's more important to teach our kids how to think. And that's what today's episode is all about. Bill and I explore fallacies, biases, and propaganda. What do these three things have to do with blending families together? Allow me to illustrate from a blended perspective before we introduce our expert guest. Let's start with fallacy, which is really a mistaken belief, especially one based on unsound arguments. Now, if you have teenagers, well, wait, if you have a two-year-old, you have heard an unsound argument. A blended fallacy could sound like this, that all divorces for stepfamilies are caused by the stepchildren. Stepkids may create those challenges for new couples, but it is a false notion or a fallacy to point to this one reason for divorce. Next up, biases. We believe our view is the right view, and we wonder why people don't see things the way we do because it's so obvious to us. When I was in kindergarten, my best friend was Cindy Weimer. When I went to Cindy's house for the first few times, I wondered why her mom did all those crazy things wrong, because my mom didn't do things that way in our house. Hey, in stepfamilies, it's so easy to get caught up in that comparison trap when the kids return to us. There are usually some hiccups as they readjust to how we roll in our home. In the beginning of blending, there can be a lot of angst when we look through the lens of judgment, wondering, why on earth would they do that? Third, propaganda. Did I just hear you groan? As if we haven't heard that word thrown around extensively in the past couple of years. Propaganda is information designed to get you thinking a certain way. It's manipulative and plays on your emotions and thought processes. The worst stepfamily case scenario comes to mind here, parental alienation that can wreak havoc on relationships. For the record, today's episode is not propaganda. It is, however, solid intel on how you and your family can blend beautifully together, even when you don't think the same way. Meet Kathy Gibbons, wife, mom, podcaster, homeschooler, Bible study creator, and master of TED, her goofy doodle. As Kathy tells it, Ted's like a goofy preteen whose body is too big for their age. Oh, can we relate to that? Hey, you can find Kathy at filteritthroughabraincell.com, where her headline declares that bad reasoning is everywhere. Kathy's on a mission to help you recognize bad thinking and teach you not what to think, but how to think. All right, family, let's get to it. Hey there, you're listening to Stepfamily Mission Possible, the podcast for stepfamilies with a focus on stepfamily couples building their legacy together. We know that blending families is hard, and your hosts, me, Jen Rogers, along with my husband, Bill, are determined to make it easier. It's time to turn stepfamily chaos into stepfamily mission possible together, so you can stop feeling that pit in your stomach on transition day and start celebrating all the reasons why you are exactly in the right place right now.
Kathy, tell us about Filter It Through a Brain Cell. Such an interesting title.
Yeah, so it's a phrase that I had heard years ago, a long time ago. So it just was in the back of my brain. And where the whole idea and the whole idea for the podcast came from is during these last couple years of the pandemic, just seeing so many people go through the ringer mentally and emotionally with the ups and downs of the lockdowns and the everything that was coming at us from the media, the election, all these things. And I thought there has to be a better way. And here's where it started. When my daughter was in seventh grade, one of the books that she read for school was about logical fallacies. And the thing that was crazy is they got it. These seventh graders, they got it. So we would be talking in conversation and they would catch the bad thinking. They would say, "Mommy, that's a red herring," or "That's a either or fallacy," or whatever. And they would point them out. So then that was school year 2019-2020. So of course we roll right into the pandemic and then right into the presidential elections, and watching these presidential debates with a seventh grader who knows the names of these logical fallacies was crazy. And the thing that I realized is I thought, when you have this skill, you're not fooled anymore. You don't get fooled by ridiculousness. You don't get fooled by bad arguments. You don't get fooled by bad thinking and bad logic, because you can recognize it for what it is. And I thought, what a gift that these kids have this skill, because I didn't learn this when I was in school. I didn't learn it till my daughter was learning it. What a gift it is, especially when we're living in a society that is full of misinformation, right? That is full of two sides of the story, or three sides, or four sides, all of them claiming to be real and claiming to be true. How do you discern what it is? And so I thought, this is such a good foundation for developing discernment with media, discernment with the messaging that we're being told, with reading any kind of article or ads or headlines. So I thought, I need to share this. This can be my contribution to the world. I want to share this with people who aren't getting this in their school curriculum. And so that's where the podcast started.
Let it not be said that you cannot learn things from your seventh grader.
Exactly right. On the regular, I think. I do.
On the regular. That's right. But we can't let them know too much about that, because I don't know. Well, yeah, no, that would not be good for us.
Kathy, when you communicate these ideas to parents, do you find a bit of an aha sometimes? They go, "Oh, that's why this doesn't make sense. That's why it's two sides talking against each other all the time, over and under each other, and there's never a connection."
100%. It always makes sense. Once you know the names of what, and one of the things that I'm really tried to do in my podcast is I don't just tell them, "Hey, here's the definition of this fallacy and here's the name of it." I give examples and I explain what's wrong with the thinking, so that way they can understand, "Oh, this is why that thinking is incorrect," or "This is why that thinking is invalid. That's why it doesn't work." And when you know that, you can always go back and you can pinpoint it. And there's so many things in society that there's arguments going on right now. And when you can trace it back, a lot of times people will hear something, and like you said, like, "That just doesn't sound quite right, but I can't put my finger on it." Well, learning the fallacies helps you put your finger on it, and you can point out exactly what it is. And then you can make a good argument. You can't make a good response if you don't know exactly what you're responding to.
Oftentimes, we're not responding to the issue. We're responding to the person, and we're attacking the person, or we're attacking
ad hominem.
We're attacking
that's
the person.
What it is? Yes.
Oh yeah, scholar. A room of scholars right now. This is awesome. I love it. Hey. I love it.
Well, I don't know about that. I'm just a homeschool mom who learned this with her daughter. But what happens? You're absolutely right, Jen. Is we respond and we either attack the person, and the other thing that happens is we go into emotionalism. We respond out of emotion. And this is why you just see people just going at it, attacking. And the more emotional you get, it is scientifically proven, the dumber you also get at the same time. So we have all these people who are emotionally hijacked, making arguments that are getting worse and worse as they go. And it just turns into a hot mess, as we've all seen. If you're on social media, you've seen it.
We may have experienced it once or twice in our own household. No. When our amygdala gets abducted. Yes, Miggy. Yes. We have a whole episode about that, where our amygdala has been hijacked. And we call that our Miggy, where our Miggy takes over. And that's from one of our guests that we had on the show. It was a whole lot of fun that it keeps coming up.
On the one hand, it's great to learn these things. But the more you learn, I think the more you tend to get frustrated, because you see people who just aren't willing to climb over the hurdles it takes to actually connect with people. How can we, parents, help our kids to recognize that logic has been completely hijacked
in
their world?
Oh my gosh. Boy, has it ever been completely hijacked? I'll just say this. The things that I do, that we do with our daughter, is we just talk about them. We point them out. We point out when we see things that or bad logic, that are bad thinking. And since she has already learned some of them, for instance, I'll be scrolling through social media, and if I see something that is clearly bad logic and bad thinking, she's not on social media or anything, so she doesn't come across them. I come across them, and I'll show it to her, and I'll just say, so what do you think? I won't lead her. I won't. Now she goes on to me, so she'll know there's something that she needs to be looking for. But what I'm doing, my whole goal in that is to start building a file of this is what good thinking is. This is what bad thinking, this is how to think about it. So we are creating opportunities to have this conversation by us bringing them to her. When we see things that are bad thinking and bad logic, we'll talk about it. We'll bring it to her and talk about it. I make her think through, okay, what's wrong with this and why is it wrong? So that way she can recognize it. Because I feel like if we don't teach that discernment, if we don't teach that critical thinking, how are they going to develop it? Sometimes that takes some, it takes time for that to develop in our kids. So we're very proactive about saying, hey, somebody said this. What is that, right? Where did that come from? And having those conversations. And usually she'll go along with it. Sometimes she's like, oh, brother, not again. But it doesn't matter. We just keep having the conversations because it's all going in there and it's all kind of training that mindset.
Yeah. Can you speak a little bit more to that as far as having those conversations, particularly in newer relationships? So when families first blend, they're still trying to figure each other out. They may come across as a little more defensive or not as chatty catty to share some of those things. I imagine you have some strategies for parents to help encourage those conversations to happen with a little bit more, with a little bit easier.
Ooh, that is a great question. Because so our dynamics in our family is we have one daughter, so she's an only child. And so sometimes for her, it can feel like it's just all on her. So we have been tried to be very careful to have conversations among the three of us so that it's not just only focused on her. Because that can feel like, okay, I'm being put on the spot here. I don't want to be put on the spot. I don't want to have this. Another thing that we have learned that works really well is with teens, sometimes more than a face-to-face conversation is a shoulder-to-shoulder conversation. It's where you're both doing something together. There's an activity like you're driving in the car somewhere, or for us, we live in Colorado and we like to ski. So on the ski lift, we're shoulder to shoulder, we're doing something together. And it's easier to have short little conversations than to sit down and have some big, you know, like you're probably not going to get that with a teenager or with a brand new relationship, especially with a teenager, where they're going to want to sit down and have this big in-depth conversation with you. At least my daughter's not interested in that. But short little snippets as we're living our life together, they add up. And we can't, I feel like we can't underestimate those, the importance of having those short little conversations just as we do life together.
Okay, I've got to jump in here and say that I was doing a little internet snooping. So I was checking out your husband's podcast, which you told us about because you started that with him. And so his whole premise is about emotional intelligence and self-proclaimed he didn't really have any. And apparently you gave him some sort of awareness that this was not cool. Can you share a little bit about how that started? And then I'll ask you another question in relation to your family dynamics. But let's start there, emotional quotient and intelligence with your husband.
Yes. My husband was raised in a family where they didn't really deal with their feelings and emotions when they came up. It was just stomp off, have a big fight, blow up, stomp off into your own rooms, and then come back and pretend like nothing happened. So there's no resolution. There's no learning how to deal with those big feelings and emotions. And so what happened with him is he got really good at stuffing and avoiding. And we had no idea that he was doing this, right? He thought it was normal. I thought he was fine because he was good at stuffing and avoiding. But you can only do that for so long until it starts. It's like when the more you shove down into the box, at some point the box can't hold it anymore and it's going to come flying out. And at a certain point in our marriage, that was starting to happen. And he was starting to have his was coming out as anger, and he didn't know why, and he was yelling and all, you know, and all of these things. And one day I told him he was having these big emotions and exploding on us. And I'm thinking, what is going on with this man? I said, babe, do you know that it's possible to feel something, but still choose how you're going to behave? Just because you're angry doesn't mean you have to yell. Just because you're angry doesn't mean you have to punch a wall or kick the cat or something like that. And that seems so simple to me, but for him, it was like the mind blow emoji, right? He was like, what do you mean? Because he had never been able to separate his feelings from how he was acting. And that kind of started us on this journey of discovering emotional intelligence and learning the language. What is just start with the words. What are the words? Most people can't define how they're feeling beyond happy or sad. Happy, sad, angry, maybe embarrassed is the handful of emotions, right? That people start with. But that's only a small representation of hundreds of emotions that we have and that we experience. And so we started on this journey of learning how to handle our emotions in a healthy and in an appropriate way. And that is what led to his podcast, the EQ Gangster podcast. And he now does corporate consulting and he has a membership that he trains people and families. And it's cool how it all started from this big blow up that we had one day at our house.
So interesting. So how did that impact his relationship with your daughter?
I'll tell you what, thank the Lord, he caught it when he did, because I would say she was probably about 6 or 7 when this had happened. And if he had not learned how to manage and how to really deal with his own emotions, it would have irreparably damaged his relationship with our daughter. Irreparably, because one of the feelings that he couldn't handle was feeling rejection. And, you know, as kids get older, they don't want to be snuggled and hugged and kissed, right? Like they do when they're really young. And so she was starting to want some space, and he was experiencing that as massive rejection, which then would lead to anger. And he would shut her out and shut her down and push her away. And I'm seeing this and I'm thinking, oh, this is not good. This is not going to be good. So I'm so thankful that he had this realization and started working on this and got on the other side of it, especially before the teen years, because the teen years are emotional enough. If we had had him being highly emotional along with the teenage, like it would have been a disaster. And it would have been, I think, incredibly damaging to their relationship. Whereas now we don't have that. We don't have that dynamic. Yes. Thank the Lord.
Really powerful that it's important that we can share what we are experiencing without fear of that rejection and without fear of sharing what our opinions are, which really takes us right back to your podcast.
The two go together, because if you're able to have conversations, one of the things we like to talk about is as a couple, you're going to fight, but you have to know how to fight. We don't fight always to win, because we lose if we win, if you know what I mean. We've got to try to find the common ground, but that's where your fallacies comes in. Because if we can't speak logically, then we're just going to throw mud at each other.
I just want to say, there was a time that I really did like to win the fights. I didn't really win, but I really wanted to win. Just full disclosure here.
We all have.
It feels good sometimes, right? To be right.
It feels good when you are right. Yes, it does. But what feels good truly is when you can look at something and evaluate what it is so that you can make up your own mind about what you think about it versus adopting somebody else's feelings about it.
And that's what happens. If you don't know how to think about things, there is always somebody out there who's trying to tell you what they want you to think. There is no shortage of opinions out there. There is no shortage of people who are trying to give you a message, who are trying to get you to think the way that they think. And if you don't know how to do it, by default, you will adopt one of those. And so there has to be this intentionality that comes to, okay, what's my worldview going to be? How am I going to view things through? How am I going to think about life? How am I going to think about the messages that I'm being bombarded with on a regular basis? And that's where we can, in these little conversations, just in a fun way, start teaching our kids the tools to be able to do that.
That is such a great point you just made about worldview, because what I find, Kathy, is that we live in a society that doesn't know worldview, because we're taught everything's relative. And especially speaking to the kids, which you do on your podcast, and to their parents, we really do need to address that from the perspective that everything's not relative and you're only going to cause great problems. And we see, for example, in our society today, and what I just saw a story that people are protesting outside of court judges' homes now, as if that's okay. It's not.
Exactly. I was just going to say episode number three on my podcast, I talk about the two enemies to good thinking. And we've mentioned both of them already on this podcast, emotionalism and relativism. So number one, when we're controlled by, when we can't think, we're going to be controlled by our emotions. And when we think that there is no truth, so there's your truth, my truth, his truth, everybody's truth, none of it really matters, then anything goes. Everything is awry. And scripture tells us that there is truth and we can know it. Proverbs says it is the glory of God to conceal a matter and the glory of kings is to seek it out. That's part of our jobs as human beings, as being created people, is that it is our job to seek out truth. Sometimes it's hard and sometimes you have to do some work for it and sometimes it's not going to be popular. But if we can have the view that we do know that there is truth and that we can reach it, that's going to make everything a lot different. Because otherwise, talk about being somebody who's blown and tossed by the wind. If you have to change your truth on the daily, then who are you really? You can never really know who you are. And that just leads to insecurity and all kinds of identity crisis, which we're seeing. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's a huge thing in our culture today that we have to be aware of. And that kids coming up, growing up right now, you got to be aware of, what does it sound like? What does relativism sound like when you hear it? What does emotionalism sound like? And just practice those little skills, and you'll start to see them really quickly and easily.
Kathy, have you had experiences where parents have come to you and said, wow, I didn't realize that this is what was going on, especially in the society we're in where everybody is against the kid, the school's against them, even churches in many cases. How do we get this message across so that parents understand your kids are getting hijacked right from under your nose and you need to watch out for that?
Yeah, I think you said it. You absolutely said it. Your kids are getting hijacked right from under your nose and you need to watch out for it. We just have to accept that the world today is very different than the world that we grew up in. That's a hard thing for us to wrap our brains around because all we know is all we know. But if we can really grasp and realize, no, this is a totally different world. And I feel, look, if the last 2 years haven't been enough of a wake-up call, I don't know what else to say. I don't know what else to say. The record, we are seeing record highs of teen depression and suicide and mental health issues. We have to act. Like, we have to act. We can't just let this go on or it's going to continue in a downward spiral. I don't think we can say it strongly enough that this has to be a priority for parents, for their kids, to keep them out of that downward spiral.
I think for many years, parents have been receiving the message that the schools got it, or the counselors at the schools have it. I know that we experienced that talk about a hijacking, counselors hijacking and deciding what was best for the kids, which is completely inappropriate. And those are the challenges that are out there, because I do believe that Satan is running rampant right now as far as access to our children through the phones, through the media, through the schoolrooms. When you think about the number of hours that the kids are out of our influence, how can we combat those hours? And I think the easy answer is you got to get your head in the book. You need to be reading scripture and doing it together as a family and having these conversations that you've shared that you're having in your family. And I so appreciate what you said about the shoulder to shoulder conversation. I remember when I first became a mom to boys, when we got married, and I thought, oh, I used to say God gave me girls because he knew I didn't do boys. And then I have all this testosterone in my house now. What do I do with all of this? But looking at the boys eyeball to eyeball, and they're acknowledging me and saying, yep, got it. But they got nothing. And so I talked to my brother-in-law. I said, what is going on? I don't understand. Like, they looked at me, we made eye contact. Oh yeah. What they're thinking is, how do I get this woman out of my face as quickly as possible? How do I make her go away? I just need to say, okay, and go away, and then we'll be good. And then it'll be fine. I'll just deal with it later. So to get through that barrier, and not just boys, but barrier of when our kids are coming into the age of claiming their own identity with all of these confusing messages that compete with the truth that says that God made you, He created you in His image. He created you male and female, and He has a plan for you, a purpose for you, a calling on your life, not, well, this is what I read just this morning, not for the glory of myself. I had to underline that and think about that for a little bit, but for His glory and for His purposes, that we're here right now doing the things that we're doing to glorify the Lord.
One of the things that we heard early on after our daughter was born that we've kept in mind and has led us is this: peer pressure will only be as strong as family identity is weak. Peer pressure will only be as strong as family identity is weak. So you don't necessarily have to worry so much about the effects of peer pressure, because it's going to be there. It's going to happen. You're not going to stop it from happening. The way you combat it is by creating a very strong family identity. What does that look like? What does a family identity look like? And how are you defining your family? How are you defining this family that the child is a part of? Because that's going to be one of the first foundations for their identity, for who they are, is the family that they come from. So what we did is a couple things that have been cornerstone, and we haven't always been great at these. So I don't want to paint this picture that we're like amazing at this. There have been times it's ebbed and flowed. But one is family dinner time. And even now in the season of life that we're in, even if we get it in a couple times a week, we're happy with it. But we were very intentional with our family dinner time. We were going to eat together. That was also the time that we read from scripture together. We read a devotional during a phase in that. We were memorizing scripture together. We were having specific conversations. There was very much intentionality around that family dinner time. So that was one thing we did to help strengthen family identity. Another one is we picked a sport that we could do as a family. And again, for us, it works really well because we're here in Colorado. So we ski, snowboard and ski. And that's something that we have that we do together. And it takes intentionality. It takes some thought process. Family identity doesn't just, for most of us, happen on accident. It's really thinking and deciding, we're going to do this because this matters. And so we're going to make a priority and we're going to put the effort in and put the work in to do this, because otherwise it is a slow drift and the drift is always apart, right? The slow drift, because everybody gets busy doing their own little thing. And the less impactful that family identity, the more prone we are to the outside influences, because again, it comes back to, the world will give you an identity. The world will be happy to give you an identity. We have to pick what that's going to look like intentionally.
From a step family perspective, that's really interesting, because we've got kids that we have them for a week, say, and then they're going back to a different house a week later. So you've got less time to build identity that can be torn down even as they leave and go somewhere else. How do we, as step parent, and you grew up in a step family, so you have some great understanding on this, how do we as step parents inculcate that identity even in the limited time we may have with our children?
I think it's even more important to be intentional then. It's just doing the same things. Like, the things that you do, this is the good news and maybe the bad news, I don't know, but the things that you do don't change. You just have to continue to do them. It's just consistency. It's just being consistent in love and just trust that you don't see the fruit in the moment, right? You don't see the fruit at the same time that you plant the tree. It's going to take time for that to come. And just trust that those intentions and those actions and the time spent cultivating the garden, so to speak, is going to yield fruit. But you might not see it for years. It might take years for you to see that. Because the bottom line is, you can only control what you can control. You can't control what's happening when they're not in your home. You can't control what's happening when they're outside of your care. And so God calls us to be faithful for the things that he's given us. And if you have a week, you be faithful in that week and trust that you plant, you water, God makes it grow. And that will come back at some point in that child's life.
That's good advice.
When you reflect back on your first mom, second mom, and third mom, where you had transitions in your family, what kind of things stick out to you that helped you grow as a family, helped grow your family identity? Is there anything that sticks out to you?
Ooh, that's good. Yeah. So the circumstances for us, so I was a teenager. I was 16 years old when my first mom passed away. And then I was 18 when my dad remarried. And at that point, we became a blended family. There were four kids in each family. Both parents had been widowed. And so they blended eight teenagers all together. We were ranging in age, I think from 12 to 19, maybe 20. But we were all right within this 10-year range window of each other. And so two things stand out to me. Number one is my dad was always available for a candid conversation. There wasn't anything that I couldn't ask him about whatever the situation was, about my mom, about the new mom, about the new family, about what this was going to look like. He was just very candid with me, which I needed and I appreciated. The fact that he did that, it made it a lot easier for me. He just told me the truth about whatever it was that I was feeling like I needed to know. And then the second thing is when we did blend as a family is they were very intentional. My parents were very intentional about making new memories, right? About making new memories and having new experiences together as a new family. They gave us opportunities to bond in a new place. It wasn't their place or it was a new place that we were able to, and new experiences that we were able to have together. And I think that started the foundation of creating a new family identity without, you know, dismissing the ones that we had previously, but it just gave us a chance to start something new. Because that's what you're doing, is it's starting something new that's never existed before. And it's hard. It's very hard. But just those two things, as I'm thinking back as a child going through it, those two things helped. They really helped me.
And what's one thing, if you could give a note of encouragement to stepmoms or stepdads out there who are in the thick of it, where they're just seeing the thorns right now. They don't know what happened to the seeds after they planted. What note of encouragement could you give them with the adult stepkid perspective that you have now?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say just stay faithful. You just stay faithful, because I watched my parents parent us, so we blended, and there were some of us did better than others. Some of us struggled more than others. They had kids who went very much off and did their own rebellious thing for a while, and others who didn't. So there was a whole mix of all of us. And through all of it, they just stayed faithful. They loved us. They walked with God. They prayed for us. They exhibited a walk with God. They loved us. It was always safe to come back. They always made it safe to be in relationship with them. And that paid off. You can't judge the harvest by what it's looking like today. You just stay faithful and you let God take care of what's to come. You let God take care of what's in the future. So I know that's nothing earth-shattering, but hopefully it is encouraging to know that the things that God calls us to do, he calls us to be faithful, right? It's required of a man that he be found faithful. And that is enough. Just being faithful is enough. And I will throw this in there, definitely continuing. I think we have to work through our own trauma, because how everybody who comes to a blended marriage has gone through trauma. It doesn't matter if it's due to a death, if it's due to divorce, if it's due to single parenthood, whatever. It doesn't matter how you get there. There's always going to be some kind of loss or trauma or hurt involved. And I think there has to be an intentionality there toward healing. Yeah. Parents and kids, everybody's coming with baggage. And if we don't acknowledge that, and if we don't make space for that, and if we don't provide tools to help with that healing and to help with that process, that festers. And that will fester and show up 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years in the future when it doesn't have to. And that's the hard thing about it, is it doesn't have to be that way. But if you don't have the tools to do it, then that's just going to be the inevitable outcome.
Yeah, we'll only proliferate it then, right? If we don't take care of the issues now, we're just going to create the same issues in the next generation and on we go. And we've seen that. Kathy, I would love it if you would speak to the church. What I mean by that, the church is dealing right now with an identity crisis of sorts, in that so many of the young people have gone the relativistic way and they've left the church. And how does the church reach out to its parents and teens or kids so that we can begin to replant that biblical worldview that is so quickly being lost in our society?
Oh, that's a million-dollar question. I don't know that I have any great answer, but I will say this. I think it comes back to the church has to stop being afraid of the truth. I feel like the churches have gotten relativistic right along with society, and we don't have pastors, we don't have teachers who are telling the truth. And what if the church isn't going to tell the truth, who is? How different are they from the world? They're not. And so who cares? They've made themselves completely irrelevant because they're afraid to tell the truth, because the truth divides. The truth is hard sometimes. Like, let's just face it, it is. And they're more concerned about being popular. They're more concerned about growth in numbers. They're more concerned about not getting attacked or not getting anybody saying bad things about them, not being said mean things on the internet, whatever. They're more concerned about that than they are the truth. And if they're not willing to get back to the truth, I don't know. I got nothing. But I think these pastors, they have to get a backbone and they have to say, no, we're going to stand on the truth and we're going to tell the truth in love. But we're going to tell the truth. Otherwise, we're not a light on a hill. We're just another, I don't know, we're just one of everything else that's going on in the world. And I just think churches have gotten away from that. I think the focus got on, let's grow, let's be relevant, let's be all these things that don't matter. And kids today, they're seeking authenticity. They're seeking authenticity. And if they can't find that in the church, I don't know where they're going to get it from.
Such a good word. It occurred to me as you were asking and answering that question together that part of the answer lies in community, and part of the answer lies in doing things like your podcast, reminding people that God gave them the ability to think, and He calls them to think and discover and understand and gain wisdom to seek the Lord for the answers. We often hear that the things that we're experiencing today, they're not in Scripture, so we can't find answers for them. I beg to differ. God is unchanging.
It's all there.
It's all there, and none, although we might be surprised at what we're experiencing, we've had lots of surprise moments, God is not surprised by any of this that we are experiencing, whether it comes to what's been going on around the world, to what's been going on with our kids, to what's been going on in our families as we blend. God is not surprised by any of it. I want to latch on to one thing that resonated in my heart that you said, and it was about stewardship. This is an area we have been focusing on more as we've been having conversations about our role as blended couples, that it is a stewardship responsibility that God has entrusted us with. And when we look at it like that, I think it changes how we think about it to say, oh, so God thinks I'm trustworthy, even though I don't like it, I'm struggling in this area, but He's calling us to grow and He's calling us to nurture and wait patiently for the harvest. Share a little bit about how your podcast reaches teens. I know that your heart is for parents and kids to listen to the podcast together. So how does your podcast meet that need to build community and to speak the truth and to help kids and parents come more close together to build those family identities that you were sharing earlier?
My number one hope with this podcast is that as parents and teens listen together, that it creates connection, it creates conversation, it opens a door to have a conversation about something to say. Have you ever seen this? Have you ever seen the red herring? Has anybody ever done this to you? Have you ever had anybody ever do the no true Scotsman fallacy on you? And to have common language so that you can now have common conversations. Because like I said, it also opens up a door to, when you find something, say, hey, what do you think of this? And now it's another door for a conversation. But it's also doors for conversation that are founded on truth, that have truth at the heart of them, that have truth as the goal of them. It's not just a conversation about whatever. It can be a conversation about whatever, but what is the goal of the conversation? Is the goal of the conversation just say, well, I think this and I think that? Or is it to learn how to ask good questions? Is it to learn how to seek? Let's seek truth. What does God say about this? What is virtuous in this? How can we seek beauty in this? And how is this pointing us back to our Creator? How is this pointing us to God? How do we see God in this? And one of the things that has been the most impactful for me that I feel like I'm still getting good at, I wouldn't say that I have arrived, but that I've learned to do in the last couple of years, is to ask good questions. And my husband, he's naturally excellent at asking good questions. I am not. This has been something that I have had to really work on. And if you can't ask good questions, things will only go so far. A conversation will only go so far. And so to develop a natural curiosity, but also develop a few skills around what it means to ask good questions. And because if you can ask good questions, now you can have a good conversation. And I think that is a really powerful thing. I try to sprinkle episodes like that in throughout the podcast. Like when, for instance, when the whole Will Smith, Chris Rock slap happened, right? The slap heard around the world, as they say it. That's the kind of thing. Like everybody's seeing this. Everybody is talking about it. We should be talking about it too. Use the opportunity to talk about it. Because here's what was crazy. We were actually up in the mountains. We were skiing when that whole thing happened. I had come back to the condo and my husband said, hey, did you see this? This has happened. And I paid attention for the next hour on social media. And I wrote down all the things, everybody's theories, like everybody's take on it, all the different takes that I was seeing people have on this one incident on social media. I came up with 19 different things, and some of them completely diametrically opposed all these opinions. And so I thought, this is why it's so hard for kids these days, is because something happens and immediately they're being fed somebody else's opinions and lots of them. How on earth are they supposed to sift through and figure out what's true, what's right, what's good, and what they even think about it? So I did an episode. Mm-hmm. Here's how to have a conversation about this kind of thing with your kid, because you need to have it. Society, there is no shortage of material out there, right? There is no shortage for the conversations. We just have to be ready to say, let's talk about this. And you don't even have to say it. Just start the conversation. Because if you say, hey, let's sit down and talk about this, your teen is going to be like, that's so dumb. Come on. I don't want to do that. Right? You just have to dive in and have the conversation with them.
From Coaching 101, ask what and how questions to get them to respond instead of why did they do that kind of thing. Very interesting. We are really so pleased to have you on Step Family Mission Possible and really enjoy the conversation with you today. So where can people find you?
Yes. So filteritthroughabraincell.com is my website. Feel free. There's not a whole lot on there right now. This is a brand new podcast that's really taking off, which is cool. But sign up for emails there and you'll be kept up to date. I am also on Instagram. I'm trying to do reels where I'm trying to do the fallacy of the day, just to keep giving little examples of fallacies and what they look like and what they sound like. So Instagram, Filter It Through a Brain Cell. And of course, the podcast is also called Filter It Through a Brain Cell. And that would be the main place. I recommend start with episode one and listen forward. They are done sequentially, and it'll make a little bit more sense if you listen in order.
I like that. Start at the beginning. I think that's a good word for families. Start at the beginning. Start right where you are. If today is the beginning, start right where you are and incorporate some of these great ideas that you've given us.
I love the concept too, Kathy. We have forgotten how to speak to each other. And if we do nothing else but listen to these logical fallacies, I'm sure those synapses will trigger in our heads to say, that's why we can't have this conversation. We try to get on the internet or on social media and poke our heads into some conversation and just get barked at like a dog. And it's like, there's nothing there. I tell people, don't even bother, because people don't know how to talk today. So thank you for that. Thank you for bringing that to our attention. And I hope this will register and say, yeah, there is something wrong with the way we speak to each other today. It's not civil. And if nothing else, we could bring that.
100%. Thank you guys for having me on. I just appreciate what you do. I just remember when the first time our family was blending, we didn't have a resource like this. Of course, this was a while ago. There weren't podcasts or anything. Dinosaurs were basically roaming the earth. So I love it that you're doing this. It's hugely needed. And I know a blessing to the people who are listening. So thank you guys.
Thanks so much. Really a pleasure to have you.
If you're tired of being exhausted and frustrated in the communications that you're having with your stepkids, it's time to get answers in the Facebook group. Look, it doesn't have to be this way. You can start right where you are to begin living your stepfamily legacy right now. And it all starts with a conversation. And that's happening in the Facebook group. All right, family, see you on the inside.